You're listening to Gabbing with Invincible with Gab and Vince Papali.
We've officially done it. First episode of Gabbing with Invincible.
Yeah, we're rookies, so give us a break, right?
Well, I'm the rookie. You've done this a million times.
It's a no-brainer. You were born for this, Gabby. You know that.
Yeah, I'm a little bit nervous, though. So bear with me if anybody's listening to this. This is my first time ever doing anything like this. So welcome to Gabbing with Invincible, episode one. I am Gab, and I'm here with my partner and father, Vince.
Great to be. I'm very proud father and partner, so I appreciate that very much. I like the partner thing. I like teammate, I think. Yeah, so we're like a team here, but that's cool.
Okay, the podcast team. Yeah, that's who we are. So, you know, just give you guys a little bit of background of what we are, what we're going to do. You know, we're a podcast and we are a father-daughter team, and we are the baby boomer and the millennial. And we have completely different viewpoints. We have similar viewpoints. There's a lot of topics that we're going to cover, a lot of really special guests that we're going to have on. And, you know, we just want to keep this light and fun, interesting, exciting for anybody and everybody that wants to listen. Dad, do you have anything to add to that? Who we are, what we're doing?
No, I think it's great, Gab, what you've decided. And you came up with this idea a couple of years ago, and there's been a lot of transition, of course, COVID. Yeah, what's that? Yeah, mom, that's right. Yeah, mom did it, Gabbing with Invincible. And anyway, you know, it's sort of like a transitional, easy for you to say, transitional period for us, you know, going through the COVID and you making your move from the Philly area and the New Jersey area down here. Now I'm recording in Jupiter. I'm in Philly now at our, what I call our pit stop in Queen Village, and Gabrielle, of course, is down in Jupiter. So, you know, there's been a lot of transitions, and finally we've decided to pull it together. And there's a lot of stuff going on, you know, obviously me being the jock and you the Syracuse grad, and, you know, and you've had a touch of communications. It's really cool just to get together and see what we can come up with. We're unique, uniquay in a certain respect, as mom would say. And there aren't too many father-daughter teams out there doing what we're doing. And we certainly, through our lives and our journeys, we have a lot of contacts and a lot of people who we've talked about this, and they say they would love to join us. So it's going to be fun. Episode one. Hey, listen, you know, every once in a while, we're going to get flagged. We're going to have a holding penalty. We'll be offsides. You know, we might hit below the waist, but we're going to just have fun with it and not be too serious, because right now the world needs a laugh. And we hope we're going to put a smile on your face and maybe give you another and a great perspective, or a different perspective on how you look at things, people, events, personalities, whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. And so before we even like get into interviewing anybody else, talking about anything else, we thought maybe it would be a really cool idea for the first couple of episodes for you to get to know us. And so today I'm going to interview Dad and have a conversation with him. And, you know, with the Gabbing with Invincible, some of you may be confused. I don't see the relevance. Well, if you don't see the Gabbing, then hello, welcome. My name's Gab. Gabriella. Good job.
That's Mike Gabby coming out too. So, yeah, and listen, I do not have the questions. I have no idea where she's coming from. And every once in a while, you know, father, daughter, you think your daughter's come from Mars. So, you know, it might be a couple jabs and a couple left, you know, and a couple body shots, but I have no idea what she's going to ask, and we'll roll with it, and it'll be fun. So, you know, I hope you enjoy it. We're really having a good time just having put it together, and I hope you have as much fun as we do. So I'm ready when you are, Gabrielle. Yeah.
Well, and so for those of you who are wondering, you know, where's the Invincible come from? Well, quick overview, Dad, subject of the movie Invincible. So Dad, why don't you give a, you know, quick 2-minute synopsis of how the movie came about and what it is about?
Okay, well, basically it's about the dream, and it's everybody's dream, and it's everybody's desire to do something that's a little bit different and off the wall, you know. And of course, when you dream big, and when I go out and I talk a lot about this and some of the obstacles you have to go through to get there, all the way from the bullying side of things, which you know about and I knew about, all the way up to it's never been done before, you're to this, you're to that. And I had this great quote given to me by my high school coach, who said, "Happy are those who dream dreams and are willing to pay the price to make them come true. And, you know, I certainly paid the price, and, you know, it did come true. And I got the shot of a lifetime by Coach Dick Vermeil, who I was with last night as he was being honored in Philadelphia. And he gave me the chance of a lifetime to do something nobody's ever done before, a 30-year-old rookie coming into the NFL without college football experience, Gabriella. So, you know, I did it. It was a big splash back then. And then I got into the real world, the business world, after I retired after 4 years. And, you know, we were just rolling around. And then there's you, and you come into my life and in 93. And then Vinny comes into our life, you know, and we're rolling, and I'm working in the business world. And then all of a sudden I get a call from NFL Films, and they want to do a feature on me on Monday Night Football prior to an Eagles 49ers game that was going to compare me to Rocky. I was always known as the real life Rocky, and he was a fictional Rocky. And anyway, Sylvester and Stallone have brought us together. They showed that feature. And the next day, Hollywood came calling, and Ken Mock and Brad Gann, they were the ones who put together the screenplay. And then Mark Ciardi and Gordon Gray, they were the ones who did Miracle and Rookie. They went and took it over to Disney, took the script to Disney. Disney fell in love with it in 2002. And here we are 10 years later, 20 years later, and 16 years after the movie was first, when it first came out around Labor Day in 06, this is what's happened. Totally transformed our lives. It's taken us around the world. It's been an absolutely incredible experience. And even last night, you know, the reaction of the crowd when I was introduced was just overwhelming. And just makes me think that, you know what, I'm making a difference. And that's what Invincible is about, is having that dream come true and making a difference in people's lives. So that's it. I hope I did it within the elevator speech. But
pretty good.
That's my 2-minute synopsis.
That was pretty good for you. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I know. You're waiting for me to start doing this.
I'm ready to be like, all right, wrap it.
She's like, yo, dad, come on. Like, you got diarrhea of the mouth. Let's go.
No, that was good. It was perfect. You know, and I don't think that a lot of people even understand what you went through to even get to that point, to even, you know, have the city of Philadelphia love you and come behind you, because you had a pretty, you know, tough upbringing with a mom that was mentally ill. Your dad, you know, was a coal mine worker.
Yeah, something like that. He bootlegged coal during the World War II and some of the trucks, because he couldn't get into World War II because he was blind in one eye, because he got lye in his eye after cleaning out the latrine. Actually, they didn't have running water when he grew up in the farm in suburban Philadelphia. And so I had an interesting background. But you know what? You can go a couple ways with that, Gabriella. You can use that as an excuse and become the victim, or you can use that as a motivation and take it to the next level. And I like to think that I use it as a motivation. I was motivated by some very influential people in my life. And Coach Vermeil made a really great point last night when they talk about it. They were talking about his humility. He said, my humility is only because of what was given to me by the people that I surrounded myself with. And I was very, very lucky to have teachers and coaches and people that believed in me at a very tough time in my life, with my mother going through her mental illness and in and out of mental hospitals, and the drugs that she was taking. And it was very difficult. My dad trying to cope to keep the family together. And it was those teachers and coaches that really pulled me together. And that's basically why I, in essence, tried to reward them by becoming a teacher for 6 years at my alma mater in suburban Philly, Interborough High School. And I'm going to be with a whole bunch of my track guys in the next couple of nights. And there it is, you know, so I could have used that as an excuse and maybe gone off and tripped out myself and got into drugs and alcohol, but I didn't. It was, to me, it was the impetus, but it was only because of I had people around me that helped me. And then my whole life was changed 28 years ago when this beautiful young lady that I call the North Star was born on New Year's Day in 1993. And that happens to be the lady that you're looking at right now. Yeah. And Vinny, what a transition. And I'm the most complete, fulfilled man that you could possibly imagine. Just now telling the story, I'm getting goose pimples, and because I'm so, you know, Gabby's waiting for the tears to start coming. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, you can always have an excuse, but, you know, excuses are like, you know what they are. Everybody's got one. So
was there ever a point, though, when you know, in your life, when you were growing up or when you were teaching or something like that, and you were like, I know that I'm meant for more. I'm meant to do more. There's more, like, this isn't it for me. And I know that. Like, what was that point and what was that turning point?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you, it wasn't as much Gabriella athletically as it was intellectually. And when I was teaching school, I had, and Vietnam was hot and heavy in the late 60s, early 70s. And a lot of my students were coming to, because I was that hip guy. I was the athlete. I had the hair, you know, the whole deal. And they had a lot of confidence and trust in me. And they used to come to me with issues and problems and, you know, coming from single family homes and, you know, the drugs and the pot was starting to come into the schools. And they were looking for advice from me. And I thought I was incapable of doing it. And I'd gone through a really nasty, wicked divorce. And I wasn't really feeling all that good about myself. And the big transition was I actually decided I was going to go to Westchester at that time, State Teachers College, now a university. And I started working on my master's degree in counseling to sort of self-evaluate me, number one, and other also give me some of the tools to help these kids, because I was sort of a freak. You know, I was into Ayn Rand back then. I was into Freud, those kinds of things. I was a little bit different of a thinker, aside from being a jock, and I was absolutely the ultimate athlete. But, you know, that was one thing, I think, that I felt where I needed to fill that gap. But once I felt it and I got that confidence and then that opportunity given to me by Coach Ramil, and he always says about opportunities, be prepared. Man, I was more than ready. And I looked at that and I said, this is a piece of cake. No sweat. If I don't get there, I'll go back and I'm ready to be a teacher and a coach and a counselor for the rest of my life.
And I think it just goes to show too, the impact that obviously, you know, teachers have a big impact on the kids, but I think it also can show the impact that the kids can also have on the teachers and molding them and, you know, forming them and helping them also, because you were young when you were a teacher, you know, when
you're 22 teaching 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I wasn't.
You were still a baby.
Lost. My rookie year of teaching. Oh my God. What a mess. You talk about a failure.
But so it just shows, you know, it doesn't even matter what walk of life you're in, whether you're a teacher, you're a professional athlete, you're a, you know, a broadcaster, whatever it is, you know, there's always going to be these teachers and molding experiences when you first get into something, but it's, you know, the end game that I guess really matters and the impact.
And you know, it was a different time in the world where you could make a mistake and not be vilified for doing that. Yeah. You know, it's not quite the same as it is. I could say things that were pretty stupid that I wouldn't be castigated for, mm-hmm. You know, and so it was a whole different social environment back there. We didn't have social media, you know, you didn't have the computers. We didn't have any of this. And so most communication, either, you know, on the phone, you didn't have cell phones, but it was face to face.
Yeah.
And, you know, so if I was bullied, at least I had the person had the guts come up to me and tell me I was whatever I was.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, though, went because of my mother's mental illness and, you know, how when, you know, 12, 13, 14 year olds could talk about somebody, you know, your mom's a nut. There's this, that and the other thing. But, hey, listen, you know, it's what you have with inside you. And as you said, those people and, you know, my dad wasn't a bitchy guy. You know, he was just working hard. And his father came from Naples, for crying out loud, in 1914. He didn't have papers. You know, they have names for guys that didn't have papers when they went through Ellis Island. And it wasn't easy for my dad. And, you know, back then, the love word wasn't anything that's that was used often, if ever. I was never in my house being told that I was loved. Yeah. And I think I felt, as I think about this now, Gabby, is that I was, more than anything, I was trying to please my parents more than fulfill those needs and desires I had, you know, and that was to make sure that my parents, I thought, loved me and respected me and, you know, thought I was somebody special. And then, of course, I found out that it was okay. It's just after some professional help, by the way, it was okay. After I realized, you know, hey, this is just the way it is. And how people react to certain situations, and it's helped me, and it helped me a great deal.
Yeah, and I think that also probably molded you into the dad that you are today, because you rarely go a day without telling us that you love us at least once or twice a day.
Well, at least, yeah. You know, yeah. And every phone call, every text, whatever it is, and to me, it means a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not just a word. You know, it's a feeling, it's a passion that you have, And I always talk about having roles and, you know, playing a role out with passion, where people say, well, how do you see yourself now? I say, well, I want to be the best husband I can be, and I want to be the best dad I can be. And I'll play that out with passion. So the love word isn't something that's used just because it's a four-letter word that people like to hear. I really believe that it's there, and the respect is there from you that I have for you, you have for me, Mom, and Vinny. So it's very, very special. And I'm very motivated and really touched every night when I go to bed. When I go, I just, hey, wherever I am in the country or the world, they can pretty much expect that text that, hey, good night, I love you, hope you had a great day. And yep. I get three letters, there's three words back, and boy, I tell you what, I sleep pretty peacefully.
Yes, I get that. So you mentioned a little bit earlier about how you didn't have social media back in your time. And, you know, when you played football in the 70s, you know, so, and I'm sure that you and your teammates like to have a little bit of fun.
It's like Las Vegas, baby. You know,
what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happened in the locker room actually stayed in the locker room, you know, like,
you know, it.
Yeah. It was just so different than it is now. And I feel like kids today are like, they're just growing up in an era where they can't even be free and be themselves because of it.
Yeah, it's a shame, you know, and because of, you have the cyberbullying that goes on, you know, and all the cowards want to say something negative about you or their fake names, and could be a bot, could be anything, but you know, so and especially during the COVID, as we know that our youth were so dependent upon social media, and I just did a presentation about mental and health wellness just the other night to a suburban school, Downingtown, and they were talking about the suicide amongst the students, and you know, not just in Downingtown but around. And now, you know, with the drugs coming through the border and the fentanyl, you know, you think you're taking a piece of candy and boop, you're gone. We didn't have all that, you know, we just had the basic stuff and we had a lot of fun together, but you know, as you say, let it stay there. But last night again, you know, seeing Ron Jaworski, seeing Harold Carmichael, you know, two of my favorite teammates, and we're all together, and we just started laughing. We look at each other and we start laughing because we knew the great time that we had, and it was all brought together by that man, and that was Coach Dick Vermeil.
There's
the picture. That's the picture right there. That's the premiere of the movie right there.
Yeah. Well, so going back to the movie, you know, you got to do some really crazy things. And I say, like, I wish that the movie was filmed and made 10 years later, because then I could have enjoyed all the parties and, you know, with all the celebrities. Like, you know, who knows where I could have been right now, you know, but that's neither here nor there. But what do you think was like the coolest thing that you got to do with, you know, because of the movie?
Well, the coolest thing was to get to know Mark Wahlberg as Mark Wahlberg, you know, not as Marky Mark or some of the other, you know, and you got to know him and Vinny got to know him, and he was part of our family. I think that was the coolest thing. Mark Chiardi, the one of the producers, he called me the other day out of clear blue sky because we had the hurricane coming through Florida, Ian, and we also had Nicole. And he just wanted to make sure we were okay. And the first words out of his mouth, how's Gabby? How's Vinny? And, then it's how are you doing? And, you know, it's that family. And I think that's the coolest thing. And they say that, you know, like Rudy and Rudy's a good buddy of mine, but those actors that played those that are still around that had movies made about them, and there were few, there's not that relationship that we have. So I think the coolest thing was just that. And you know, the fact that it's been embraced so much, the reaction of the crowd last night, like Mom came up to me, Janet, you know, Gab, and said, you were, every time you got up, you just, the people wanted pictures. They wanted that. She says, I'm looking around. Nobody got that kind of attention like you got it. And I guess, hey, listen, maybe I made a difference, but you know what it was all about, Gab, when I think about it, I was a season ticket holder and I wound up on the field. And I was just one of them. And all those people that were at the event last night, I represented them. And I ran into a couple of my track students, you know, and they started telling stories to the table about me as a track coach 45, 50 years ago, you know. It was pretty cool.
Does it ever make you feel awkward, though? Like, you know, when you're there with your teammates, too, and, you know, people are giving you more attention than maybe somebody who had a longer tenure in in the league? Like, does that make you feel awkward, or is it like, you know what, like, it is what it is. I'm proud of what I did.
Gabby, oh my God, you're killing me here. I have never been asked that question before. And let me tell you how awkward it was. And it was when I was a rookie. So that's one for you. That's right, baby. You got it.
That was off the cusp too. I didn't even know that.
That was a good one. You know, I'll tell you when it was most awkward. Like it still is, you know, with some of the guys, and I'm very conscious of it. I just try to be real cool about it. But it happened really bad in 76 because when every city that we went into, this Rocky thing started coming up, the real life Rocky thing. And I was being interviewed, and I was the feature interview for a lot of these big cities, going into LA, going into New York, going into Chicago, going into wherever we were going to play. There was the article on the sports was, hey, Papali, you know, the rookie, this, that. And all of a sudden, my teammates started shying away from me, and I could feel a little bit of jealousy, and not just jealousy, but resentment. It's fueled by jealousy. And I went to the coach. Yeah, you know, and I went to Coach Ramil, Gab, and I said, well, should I give these interviews? And I said, the guys were starting, because I was like one of them, man. I was the big party guy, and let's go out and let's set our hair on fire and cause a wreck. And all of a sudden, nobody wanted to be around me because of that. They were afraid maybe I'd say something that I shouldn't say, which I would have never done. But a lot of it was just, I was getting all this attention. And Coach says, listen, you've done something they've never done before, and they only wish that they could be where you're at right now. He said, you continue to do what you do. He says, you're an inspiration to people. This is the advice I got from Dick Vermeil back in 1976. And, you know, it is what it is, you know, and when I do my presentations, I always finish it. I said this, when people act that way, it's because resentment is fueled by insecurity, and that insecurity is fueled by jealousy. Yeah. You went through it. You went through it when you with cyberbullying. Vinny went through it with his football when you came in. Great dancer, cheerleader, Bishop Eustis, private school, you know, and then boom, you just got hit on the internet. And the same
public school to go to private school to get away from that stuff. And it's just like it never ends. Yeah. But that's people are jealous. Yeah.
You know it, and it's happened, and it just happens. But hey, and especially now. I mean, look what's going on now. You know, you can't do anything that's different without somebody coming up and saying something about you. And when it comes to social media, there's just no rules, and we had rules back then. Now it just seems like it's a lawless society in essence, yeah. Gabrielle, and we need to have some rules of engagement. And especially with relationships to other people and the use with social media. But, you know, if you try to set those rules, then you're labeled as this. So, you know, it's a lot of people just like me. I can't say half the things I want to really say because I'll get killed on social media.
Yeah, it's sad. And then also it's like, you know, these people, they're so big and mighty behind their computer and their keyboard. It's like, come say it to my face. I dare you. Let's see who wins, because I guarantee it's not going to be you. So, you know, it's insecurities. It all goes back to the insecurities and, you know, things like that. And then obviously, you know, like with the movie, there were so many amazing things that happened, so many amazing people we got to meet. But, you know, what do you think is the hardest thing that came out of the movie? Or is there anything that, you know, were there ever any times where you were like, man, I just kind of wish that this didn't happen? Or, you know, was there ever anything like that, any negativity that you felt towards it?
Well, you know, aside from the pain and angst and anxiety I had for you and Vinny and sometimes Mom, you know, because they didn't portray her the way that the original script would have had her portrayed as a world-class gymnast and, you know, coach at the University of Pennsylvania and all those things, and how she acquiesced and signed off on allow her to be portrayed as a bartender and all that and a Giants fan. Oh, my God. But I was with Harry Carson, the greatest linebacker ever, by the way, last night, which was really cool. Yeah. And, you know, the toughest thing, I guess, was just the way people react toward me, you know. And one of the toughest things actually was to get up and speak to CEOs and to people in the military, SEAL Team 6, you know, all these people that I speak to and say, how can I fit into this class, you know? And I'll tell you one of the toughest experiences I ever had, Gabrielle, because I just thought I was going through some stuff right before we went on the air. When I went to Walter Reed Hospital, And I was visiting those that were torn apart because of what was going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I'm there. And what they did is the night before I went there, they showed the movie and I went in. I'm telling you, I was so nervous because I was doing stuff for the Wounded Warriors. And the reaction that I got from them was just incredible. And I actually wrote this piece called The Second Chance. And maybe if you want to go to VincePapale.com, I'll post it, or my Facebook, I'll post it. But, you know, it's just the reaction I had from them. These guys are just looking, and women are looking for a second chance. So, you know, I guess the biggest challenge and the biggest thing was, I'm not a movie star. I'm just a dad. I'm a husband. I just worked my ass off. I didn't make excuses. And, you know, take me for what I am and just, you know, embrace me, because I'm going to hug you one way or the other, yeah. You know, and I'm going to treat you with respect one way or the other, unless you don't mess with my kids and don't mess with my family. That's the biggest mistake anybody could ever do, but not too much so far. So it's been all good.
Yeah. And you've always said, you know, with the respect thing, it's like, you know, you treat the person at the lowest level at the company, like, you know, you treat the janitor the same way that you treat the president.
I used to hang out with the janitors at Interboro. Yeah. They loved it. You know, back in the day, you know, when you maybe you want to take a little smoke, you know, you go and you take a hit or two from the cigarette in between classes. And, you know, I'd be hanging in the boiler room with the janitors, you know, or out there sweeping with them. I loved them, man. They're the salt of the earth. That's where you get the real information from those guys.
Yeah. you get all the, because they hear everything.
Don't they though?
Everything.
Yes, they do.
And then, so, you know, you said, you know, big family values, things like that. And I feel like, you know, one of my favorite things that people typically say to me, like when they describe me, is humble, which I think, given our circumstance and our situation, and same with Vinny, I think that like, that could have very easily not happened. So why do you think that, you know, we remained so humble and grounded throughout this entire experience and journey that our family has been on since 2011?
Yeah, this has been quite a journey, and I credit a lot.
No, not 2011, 2005.
2005, yeah, when it started, when we were filming the movie, and, you know, you're hanging out with them, and then, you know, we've gone to the ESPYs, we've gone to the Oscars, we've all been to all those parties, and you've been around everybody, and, you know, the thing is that you were able to deal with them and handle them, because you weren't in so awe of them, because you got used to it, you know. But I think a lot of it's credited to your mother, you know, and her humility, and how hard, what she was one of the greatest gymnasts in the world back in the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was knocked out because of an injury, but came back and did that and coached at the University of Penn, went to Wharton School of Business. Yeah. But
we're going to interview her another time. So everybody.
But all those things that she's done, she's always there for everybody. And I think that's where that humility comes from, when you see that, because of her background. Yeah. And I credit her for that. You know, me, I'm just so happy that I have people that think that I'm somebody special, and I'm right there with you. Sometimes I'm too trusting and I've gotten burned, but, you know, it's just, you guys see it, you know, because you know us on the outside, you know us on the inside. And I think that, you know, the best way to be a good leader is be a good example. And that's the way to
do it. My mom always says, you know, don't mistake my kindness for weakness, which I think all of us have been taken advantage of in certain ways, shapes, and forms, you know, many points of our lives, but it's all coming from a good place. But there comes a point where, don't mistake my kindness for weakness, and don't take advantage, because that's where the troubles can start to come in. Mm-hmm. And it gets a little bit sad. But one thing that I wanted to, you know, touch on that I don't think a lot of people know about you is that you love to garden. Like, you know, you're out in the yard, out in the garden, you know, growing, you know, hours a day sometimes. Growing up, every spring we used to go to Springdale Market, some market that had, you know, all these flowers, and we would get the tadpoles, and we got to pick out what flowers we wanted in the front yard. And even down in Florida, it still stayed the same. You know, you could open up like your own freaking landscaping company if you wanted to. But,
if I were younger, I would.
Yeah. You know, like, what made you love that so much? Because I personally am like, okay, I'll go out and pick some weeds as therapy, but that's about it.
My dad, my father. Yeah. My dad was a pig farmer. You know, he grew up on a 13-acre farm. But I'll tell you, our house, and we grew up in a housing project. In this room that I'm in right now was about as big as the house I was in. And this is the basement of a brownstone in Philly, right? And, you know, my father just loved flowers. So at our house, we always had the prettiest garden. We had the gladiolas. We always had this. We always had that. And I got that green thumb through my dad, and it just carried through with everything I've done. And, you know, aside from being therapeutical and being work, and it's not just planning, you know, with here, because everything is, you know, the rainy season, everything just overwhelming. And you have all these kinds of plants. You can't even pronounce half the names of them, but they're growing like hell. Yeah. So, you know, there's always that trimming. And then I take a great pride in what I have and what we have. And we're very social. And Gabby, we have a lot of people all the time over. We just had a big event the other night with 12 of the most influential women in South Florida. And I want things to be perfect. I guess I'm OCD, ACD, JFK, LMNOP, you know. And I like things to be right and perfect. And you know, and there's this curb appeal to a lot of things in how we judge people. And, you know, how do you judge a lot of people initially by their appearance? That's a curb appeal. Same thing with a house. So I enjoy it. And, you know, mom likes doing her golf, but I, you know, you doing your thing. And I just love going out there in the garden and working the sweat, and then boom, jump in the pool. And, you know, I'll be in that pool while you're getting 6 inches of snow up there in Philly, but I'll be out in a pool down here in Florida. So it's all good.
It's a different life, which honestly, speaking of the pool and being outside here and, you know, December and when it's snowing, I feel like that was one of the, you know, COVID was a really hard time for everybody, but I think that our family was able to find a silver lining because the four of us were under the same roof for the first time in, you know, how many years, like 6 years?
Yeah.
Eight years.
It was great. And every night. Yeah. I mean, a dinner together, even down here in Florida, you could go out and, you know, you could take the mask off. But you know, we just enjoyed being each other. You, of course, when the 76ers, when we talk about that with you and the Sixers, you know, how that was and that transition to go from there. You were your offices in Camden coming down here and being with your family for the first time, but it was very special. And every night, you know, we all got together, we all cooked. I don't cook. I just do the dishes.
We always
had that bottle of wine and just great. And music, you know, me, I always like having music on in the background, and you flipped me to country music. And, you know, I was big time punk, not punk rocker, but hard rock back in the day. And, you know, we always had the music, and we're sitting outside underneath or whatever.
Out there.
Yeah, right out there. And just the conversation was great. And we really got to know each other. And it was very, very
special. Each other. You know, it was after I was done school, Vinny was done school. I had moved out of the house and, you know, I left Philly. You forced me to leave Philly right when COVID left. You're like, get down here. We don't know what's happening. And I packed for 2 weeks and I basically never left. But you know, yeah, I mean, it was all, you know, Vinny and I got to reconnect in a way that we hadn't connected probably since he was in high school. And, you know, we all just got to relearn each other. And, I think it was a really special time. So, you know, obviously COVID was terrible. You lost your sister during that time. You know, it was hard with the lockdowns and everything like that. But I think, you know, in bad situations, I think it's really important to always find the silver lining. And I think the silver lining for our family was that we got to reconnect in that, you know, in that manner, in that, you know, in space.
Well, you know what? You just answered one of the first questions I was going to ask you next week when I do the interview with you, you know, is what were those moments? What were those transitional times? And that certainly had to be one of them, because now you've got your independence, you're moving, you're in a really cool area, Pemberton Street in Philadelphia. Your buddy from Syracuse, you had another buddy from Philly, you're all together having a good time and totally independent, doing really well, working as a star with the Sixers and NBA sending you all over the world for crying out loud. And then boom, you know, you get hit with a tsunami and your whole life changes. And, you know, you were able to make that transition and do a total career change. And we'll get into that. And that'll be a good teaser for the next time we go. Yeah, it's been phenomenal. I mean, I have the greatest life. You know, I'm a cancer survivor. So this gives me the great thing about Invincible Gab, it gives me a platform to get out and speak about my passion. And that's about trying to make a difference. And that's how I want to be remembered. You know, a guy worked his ass off against all odds. You know, that movie, I love that movie. And, you know, the song. And that's basically what life's all about. We're all right now, we're all against all odds.
Yeah,
a lot absolutely. Of stuff going on out there.
Work harder than the next guy, you know? So before we close this out, I have a fun little game I want to play with you.
Oh, by the way, we got to talk about Chef G. So I'm going to get you guys. I got to get you going back. If you ever not, I don't know if it's on YouTube, but you got to look up Chef G. You
That's
are so
Chef G.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, my fans, I have a fan base on that, you know. Ooh, I've had my fans.
Vinny hates it.
Vinny refuses to follow it. He's like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Meanwhile, his friends love it. And I have a solid fan base of 300 people. Thank you very much. I do need to revive that. I've had some inquiries about her, and so I'll have to.
At her. Oh, now this is the third person. Sounds like you're going to run for office.
Oh, yes. Okay, so it's just a quick game. There's like 6 or 7 questions of this or that. Do you know what that is?
All right.
Go ahead.
What's called rapid fire or whatever?
Like this or that. So you pick, okay, so if I say, I don't know, beach or pool, then you have to pick which one you prefer.
Okay.
So first one, running or walking?
Oh, running.
Yeah. Many people don't know that he was a track star back in his day. Okay. Beer or wine?
Beer.
Really? You drink wine like every night though.
Yeah, but I still love my beer.
You can't
beer.
Crack open a bottle of wine and just chug it when you're really hot, huh?
Well, maybe back in the day, you know.
a little
dark secret. Mom said, hey, what happened to that bottle of wine? It was in that great decanter that Gabriella got us. I don't know. I think Bandit was really thirsty last night. Bandit, we have to interview Bandit. Bandit's our rescue dog. He's a beauty.
Yeah, it's the most perfect boy that has ever lived in this entire world. Anyway, all right, gardening or golfing?
Gardening.
Okay. Hockey or baseball?
Oh, hockey, man. I love hockey. I love the Flyers. Broad Street Boys, you kidding me?
I love the fighting.
Yeah. I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out, you know.
Give me all the fighting. I'm like, oh my God.
I lived right, and good friends were one of the best ever, and that's Dave the Hammer Schultz.
Yeah.
So we'll have to make sure we get connected with him when I'm back up in Philly, when we're together in Philly.
Yeah, love that. All right, 3 more. Skydiving or bungee jumping?
Neither.
Biggest fear is heights there.
Oh my God. I guess it would have to be bungee. I would have to have it tied on my arms and my legs and ankles. Bungee.
Yeah, but at least like with skydiving though, you have somebody attached to you. Like bungee jumping, it's just you and the cord.
Yeah, and then Gabby, we'll talk about it when we get together. Remind me to put that a little check mark, that picture you sent when you were out, when you were skydiving.
I was in Italy and I was like, I'm going skydiving. I didn't tell him, and I just sent him the picture. I was like, guess what I did today? And he was like, don't tell me you went skydiving. And he had no idea that I was even like contemplating doing that. I was like, you bet your bottom dollar. all right, 2 more. Spam or anchovies?
Spam.
Last one. Gabby or Vinny?
Well, you're my baby, so it's going to have to be you.
Yeah! Cool. I thought you were going to do like some PC answer.
Well, you said, but hey, look, I love you both the same. You know that. Come on. You're inseparable.
Yeah.
You know what I'd really like to do is I'd like to interview the both of you together. You talk about funny. Oh, my God. I could come up with some really good stuff.
Yeah. Well, and Vinny,
you're telling me almost I'm dismissed now, coach. Is this the deal? So, hey, you did great. I loved it. This was awesome.
I'm just going to plug Vinny. He's going to, you know, USFL Memphis Showboats this year, starting in March. Go Showboats. Yeah.
April 16th is the first game. Re-signed. Yeah, he's going to be with Todd Haley, former with the coach for Kansas City, and he's ready to go. All psyched. And he got introduced last night.
Yeah, I heard. That's what mom said.
Yeah, it was, and what an applause he got. It was really cool. He's ready. And hey, you know, it's all about chasing the dream, Gab. That's it. You know, whatever yours is, I'm there, and his is whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I think that's a good place to wrap this one up. You know, didn't go too long, didn't go too short, perfect in between. You know, I don't know for anybody listening or watching, whatever you do, like subscribe, share, whatever these people, I don't know whatever platform this is going out to, but just do all of it, you know, so we can get more people and reach some more people. If you do want to stay up to date on, you know, our family, our real estate group, we, you know, do real estate in Florida, New Jersey, and PA. You can go to thepapaligroup.com or www.invincibleinsights.com to get your weekly Invincible Insight sent by Mr. Vince over there. And yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it all up. You got anything else to add?
Pretty good. You did great. What do you say? A round of applause for Gabriella. Nice job.
I was nervous.
I could tell. In the beginning, not in the beginning when we were on the phone before. You were, I wanted to make sure everything was perfect, which was great. Hey, listen, I get nervous before every speech, and yeah. I've done thousands, yeah. So it's all good. It means you're ready. Yeah. It's not nerves; it's anxiety. It's that you just can't wait to get it done.
Yeah.
So between the two, but you did great. So this was fun. So next time it's you. We got to make sure that we got we get you and Vinny together. Yeah. That would be hilarious.
That'll be one in the future for sure.
That would be cool. Yeah. So, thank you, everybody. We really appreciate it. This was our first edition, so first episode, and hopefully you'll be joining us many more. We've got some really, really exciting guests, and once we get some commitments, we'll start posting them as well. So we'll let you know what's going on.
Absolutely. All righty. Well, thank you, and we will see you next time.
See ya. Dream big.
Bye-bye. Once again, thank you for listening to Gabbing with Invincible. And if you like this episode, please feel free to like it and share it. And we will see you next time.